I am pleased to be with someone that I worked with during the Bush years, former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice.
Pleasure to be with you, April.
Secretary Rice, you're in Washington. What are you in Washington for beyond this great book?
Well, I'm in Washington because of the book.
Okay.
And I'm having an opportunity to talk about democracy, about why I wrote this book. Mm-hmm. I've been in New York as well, and I'm going to go out into the country, which I'm really looking forward to. I'll be in Cleveland and Chicago and Kansas City, because I think we need to have a nationwide, a national conversation about democracy broadly, America's role in promoting it, but also about our own democracy.
And that's an important issue here in Washington at a time like this, our democracy. I've talked to Republicans and Democrats and who have wondered, can our democracy really stand with the newness of our new president? So many people are talking about, you know, we wanted something new, but you didn't really realize what you wanted, and now you've got something totally new. It's not someone who's been in governance, a businessman with a business approach. Can this democracy stand?
I have great confidence in our democracy and our democratic institutions. In fact, democracy is built for disruption. It's the only system that has shock absorbers where people can vote to change their circumstances, do it peacefully rather than simply going into the streets and fighting it out. And this time we've had an unusual election. April, I wrote the book, actually wanted to write this book for many years, and I started it more than almost 4 years ago. So I didn't expect it to come into this environment. But after I had just about finished it, I wrote a little epilogue called 2016. Because I do think 2016 has exposed that democracy is going to have to deal with some new challenges. We do have a president, for the first time in our entire history, who's never even been close to the government. He comes out of the business community. I suspect that when you look inside, look from the outside, inside, it looks relatively simple. You come in, you make some decisions. But what we're seeing is that democracy has lots of checks and balances. Democracy has multiple power centers that are equal. The Founding Fathers went out of their way to say that the first branch of government is actually the Congress, not the executive. And so that's why I'm confident that our system can handle whatever disruptions we're seeing from this very new circumstance. I also think the president's on a little bit of a learning curve. And learning curve's tough for any president. I served a couple of presidents in their first terms. But this time, having never even been close to government, and a lot of the people around him having never been in government, the learning curve's been pretty steep.
So when I think of your book in democracy and all the countries that you talk about, the emergence of democracy or hope for democracy, I'm thinking about 9/11 and how the Bush administration attacked the issue of democracy. And you really focused on countries that were rogue, focused on countries that really didn't have democratic rule, because that is where terrorism could fester and breed. And I'm thinking about one country in particular, Kenya, when the president was supposed to go there. And you couldn't because there was a challenge to democracy. Can we start talking about the issue of democracy with Kenya someplace? And the president even had a state dinner for the Kenyan president, but he could not indeed go to Kenya because of issues of democracy.
I'm glad you brought up that case, because when people talk about democracy promotion, their minds immediately go to Iraq and Afghanistan. And they say, well, it failed there, so how can you talk about America having a role in promoting democracy? And I'd like to make a couple points and then come back to Kenya. The first is, those weren't cases of democracy promotion. We had security problems. Mm. I would never have said to President Bush, let's use military force to bring democracy to Iraq and Afghanistan. You don't bring democracy by military force. But once we'd overthrown the Taliban because they were a safe haven for al-Qaeda, or Saddam Hussein because we thought he had reconstituted his weapons of mass destruction, we had to have a view about what should come after. And we wanted to give the Iraqi and Afghan people a chance toward democracy. But most often, democracy promotion and support for democracy is more like what happened in Kenya. Here we had a country that had democratic institutions, but it hadn't had a turnover in the presidency for decades. Right. And I remember when President Bush met with President Moi, and he was thinking about trying to stand for another term. And the president said to him, President Bush said to him, you know, when the American people are done with me, I'm going to go back to Texas. And basically, why don't you go back to your grandchildren? And he did eventually step down. They had an election. It was an election that produced a lot of anger. It produced riots. And so I tried to, as Secretary of State, I went to help Kofi Annan, help them get to a union, a national unity government between the two contestants. It succeeded. Mm-hmm. The next time around, when they had a contested election, they took it to their constitutional court to resolve it. And the loser called the winner and said, I concede. That's also democracy promotion, and that's what I think we do well. And I just have to say, in Africa, we've seen more and more examples of democracy working. In Nigeria, for the first time, when Goodluck Jonathan lost, he called his opponent and said, you have won, I'm stepping down. So there's a lot to celebrate about democracy.
So, and I'm thinking about this when you're talking about democracy promotion. I remember traveling with you to Haiti under the UN Blue Helmet forces when they were you were pushing for free and fair elections there. And talk to me years later. What do you feel about Haiti? I mean, you tried to make an effort to have things change and work for the better, to help promote a better culture, population, just better country for Haiti, who is one of the worst countries in the Western Hemisphere.
Right, and April, you were on that trip with me to Haiti, and as we were driving in, I had seen poverty before. I'd never seen anything quite like Haiti. And I remember the little children playing in the mud because it had been raining there, and thinking, this country's just got to get on a better course. And it's had so many dictatorships and so much bloodshed. And indeed, the world came together around trying to get Haiti toward democratic elections. Hasn't fully taken in Haiti. It's still a sad place. But I think we have to keep working toward it. We don't have any right as Americans to be impatient with others who are trying to make their way to democracy. It took us a while. One of the things that I do in the book is to trace our own history, reminding people that the first American Constitution actually counted my ancestors and your ancestors as three-fifths of a man. I remember in congressional testimony a congressperson saying, well, the Afghan Constitution has this terrible compromise in it between Sharia law and individual liberties. And I said, not half as bad as the compromise that made my ancestors three-fifths of a man. So we have to have a long view. We have to keep helping people who want to have the basic liberties that we have, the right to say what you think, the right to worship as you please, not to have the secret police at your door, to elect those who are going to govern you. We need to stand with them. And in this book, I talk about a lot of the failed opportunities for that, but also some of the successes.
In the book, you talk about Cuba, you talk about Russia, you talk about Ukraine, you talk about Turkey, you talk about a whole bunch of countries. But I want to focus in on three countries right now that are in the news. Cuba, our relationship with Cuba has changed. What do you think really has propelled that? Because they still have some issues. Democratic rule is still fleeting there. But what has changed in your mindset for us to start moving forward? I guess in the last administration we moved forward. We have yet to see what we will do with this administration.
Yes, I didn't object to President Obama's decision to try to open up relations with Cuba. I wish we'd put a little bit more pressure on the Cubans on human rights, on the release of political prisoners, because I think we have a lot of leverage with a country like Cuba that's trying to break out. I also worry about Cuban activities in places like Venezuela. I mean, this is a country, Venezuela, that is used to be a middle-income country, and now people can't find food and medicine. And so the Cuban support for regimes like the Maduro regime is a problem. But I'm hoping that one day the Cuban people are going to find their way to a more democratic future. I remember sitting at the Organization of American States, and the only country that could not sit at the table was Cuba because they didn't have a democratically elected president. So that's something that we need to work toward, because very often people say, well, authoritarians can be efficient. Well, in Cuba, that regime has not been efficient. The Cubans are still among the poorest people in the hemisphere.
So in your book, how do you address Putin and democracy in Russia? And You're someone who has a history with Russia, a long history, to include working with several presidents from Gorbachev to Putin. Where does democracy fit in all this, and how do you express this in your book?
I talk about in the book, you know, our great expectations when the Soviet Union collapsed. Russia seemed poised for democracy. It had a highly literate population. It had high levels of industrialization. The Russian population is mostly ethnically homogenous, and Gorbachev had made some reforms before the Soviet Union collapsed. But I think Russia is a story of too much too fast. The privatization that took an economy that used to be 99% government and made it 57% non-government practically overnight, and Russians' pensions and their economic benefits collapsed. 50% of the Russian population went below the poverty line in a matter of a couple of years. It's also a story of President Yeltsin, who I admire for what he did in ripping Russia out of the Soviet Union. But April, he did what so many executives do. He started ruling by decree. He started going around the legislature. He was frustrated with the slow pace. Now, a strong presidency under Boris Yeltsin is one thing, but that same strong presidency when Vladimir Putin takes over is quite another. And he has systematically gotten rid of all of the checks and balances in the system, the free press, civil society. The legislature is just a rubber stamp. A democracy is safest when the executive is checked in power. But it's also safer when you are fortunate enough to have a good first president. The United States was lucky. George Washington didn't want to be king. If he'd wanted to be king, you and I might have learned how to curtsy. But indeed, he didn't want to be king. I had an experience that reminded me of this. When Nelson Mandela came to visit President Bush, you know, they had had some differences around the Middle East. And so I said, why don't you talk to him about AIDS relief? That's something the two of you have in common. Well, you know, President Bush, he never completely followed my script. So he sat down and he said to President Mandela, why didn't you run for another term? And President Mandela said, because I wanted my African brothers to know that it was okay to step down. And I thought, what a great lesson for a continent that had had too many presidents for life. Here was one of the great figures in all of African history saying, it's okay to step down. And so first presidents matter.
So when we talk about these presidents in rule of law, decree versus legislation, where do you see the future of democracy, be it Russia, Ukraine, the United States? I mean, because and Europe, things are changing. People are changing. Mindsets are changing. People want something new, but they don't know exactly what it is. Where does democracy stand in the midst of all of this?
Yeah. Well, one reason that I wrote this little epilogue called 2016 is that I think we see one direction that could be troubling. Because a lot of people feel that they were left out of the benefits of globalization, they don't have the job skills for the jobs that are available, they don't feel that they have good prospects, they've turned to populism. And populism really means somebody gives you an easy answer for why you're not succeeding. It's the illegal immigrants that are taking your job. It's the big banks that are taking your jobs. And populism, along with nativism, it's me against them, against protectionism, it's just going to be about my economy, isolationism, we're not going to be involved with those people, we'll just take care of ourselves, didn't work out so well the last time around. We actually got the Great Depression and World War II. So that's the challenge for democracy now, is to find a way to include all of those people who feel that the institutions are not serving them well. And for me, the answer is pretty straightforward. We've been best as a country when human potential is at its best, and that means everybody has to have access to a high-quality education. And so the thing I probably worry most about is that I can look at your zip code and I can tell whether you're going to get a good education. And a lot of our poorest kids are being so badly served by our schools. And that's going to make us too countries, one capable and one not, and no democracy can ultimately survive that.
Hmm. What's the best democracy out there right now?
The United States is still the best democracy. The United States, with all of our noise and yelling at each other, and people sometimes must look at us and think, my goodness, what is going on in the United States of America? But out there in the world, I always say to people, the reason America is the great democracy that it is not because it's perfect. No democracy is perfect. It's quite imperfect. But it's got a couple of things going for it. Has a constitution that the founding fathers left that has over time been able to include more people in We the People. So one of the remarkable stories is the descendants of slaves would believe that they could use the American Constitution to gain their full rights. And that's what the NAACP did and Thurgood Marshall. They appealed to America to be what it should be, what it said it was, not just what it was. It's also the case that we have something more than our government that supports our democracy. That's individual citizens helping individual citizens through civil society. When I go out and I see people volunteering at Boys and Girls Clubs or the American Red Cross or Rotary Clubs for that matter, when I recognize that the states play a really important role in governance, I think we have a really robust system because it operates at a lot of different levels and sometimes it operates with citizens themselves. And so I'll take American democracy.
And the last question, as we talk about democracy in this great book of yours, there is a challenge to our democracy. There was a challenge to our democracy in this presidential election, and France even had the same situation. Why should people be concerned about the influences of Russia on this election?
Well, we need to be concerned because I accept fully the intelligence reporting that I see in the newspapers. I no longer look at intelligence products, but our agencies tell us the Russians were behind the hacking. I believe it. I do think it's really important to say, let's get to the bottom of what they did. But let's not let them erode our confidence in our electoral system. Vladimir Putin is an eye for an eye kind of guy. And Hillary Clinton, Secretary Clinton, called his election fraudulent in 2012. It was. And I think this was partly, he's going to pay back the Americans and show us that your elections can be called into question too. So I would have preferred to say, we know you did it, Russia. At a time of our choosing, we will punish that behavior. But don't even think that you are undermining our confidence in our institutions, because that gives him great satisfaction.
Anything else you'd like to add?
I'd just like to say to Americans, I know these are tough times, but American democracy is only as robust as its citizens' interest in making it so. It was once said that democracy is about ceaseless agitation, meaning that citizens have to constantly be concerned for and fight for their democracy. And so as long as we're doing that, we're going to be okay.